Welcome to the Better Health Radio Show right here on the Voice of Barbados, 92.9 FM. I'm Greg Stinsley, and on deck this weekend, we have Dr. Keo Ford St. Hill, and she has her guest ready and waiting to go. So let's mosey on over and say a special good evening. Good evening, Doc. How are you today?
Good evening, Gregson. I am good. How are you?
Yes, I'm just as good as you are, I hope.
Excellent. Good. And today, and good evening to all of our listeners, and welcome to the Better Health Radio Show, which is a show that is aimed at raising public awareness of common health issues that affect us all. As Gregson told you before, and I'm sure you've become familiar with my voice, I am Dr. Keo Ford St. Hill, and it's my pleasure to be your host this evening. And we are very much looking forward to an engaging and interactive session this evening. And I take this opportunity to remind you that you can contact us with your questions and comments either by calling us at 434-1790, or you can send your WhatsApp messages to 266-4862. And I will remind you of that later on in the show. So, a couple weeks ago, I do remember we had Dr. Adrian Charles on the show, and we were discussing, you know, matters as it relates to the elderly and Alzheimer's and dementia, right? And you've been asking for more, right? And today I have with me Dr. Lana Husbands, and we are actually going to focus on the caregiver today, because that is the person who is usually left out. But I'm not going to steal her thunder, but let me tell you a bit more about Dr. Lana Husbands. So Dr. Husbands is a registered medical practitioner in Barbados with over 20 years experience. So I didn't bring any spring chicken for you guys. I brought expert. She has experience in private specialist hospitals and a public emergency center in the UK, and she owns and manages her own medical practice for the last 15 years. She has a specialist diploma in gerontology with distinction. You can clap for that. And her responsibilities include the holistic care of the elderly, such as diet and nutrition, dental care, caregiving, and the like. So she organizes a synchronized and coordinated service for major medical and non-medical services when it comes to the elderly, right? In addition to that, she's an avid animal lover, an affiliate member of Action for the Animals Barbados, a registered charity for the welfare of animals. So in some of the information she had sent me, she's spoke about the fact that there's a significant frustration expressed by caregivers, especially informally, and the lack of curated information for caregivers to self-care. They often work to exhaustion and burnout from uncertainty, fatigue, guilt, and even resentment, increasing a sense of no way out. Her vision for this area, because this is one of her pet areas, her vision is to bridge the gaps of misunderstanding among generations, so between the elderly and the young, the middle aged, develop innovative projects specifically for older persons to embrace the lifestyle of actively aging, I like that, wherever possible, and empower caregivers to feel equipped, confident, validated, and successful. I will talk a little bit more about some of the other work that she does later on, but welcome Dr. Lana Husbands to the show.
Thank you, Dr. St. Hill, and thank you, Gaston. This is such an honor. I'm so excited to be invited and to talk about, as you said, one of my favorite topics.
I'm very excited because it is, you know, being in psychiatry, working in mental health, I get that interaction quite often when it comes to particularly my elderly clients, but even some of my, you know, younger clients who can't, you know, fully care for themselves. I see the distress of caregivers in Barbados. So this is a topic that I am that's close to my heart as well, right? So the first thing I would like you to do for our listeners is define what or who is the caregiver. It might sound self-explanatory, But I think everybody has a particular, you know, they're thinking about a particular demographic and they have it in a box, right? But who or what would be a caregiver?
Right. So, and the, as you said, we usually think that's someone who's taking care of an older person who's on the decline, mm-hmm. or someone who's end stage cancer. That's pretty much how we tend to lump everybody. But a caregiver has so much more, and they have different categories. So if I can just say someone who attends to the health and the well-being or general needs of a person who might have, who has a limitation, whether that limitation is due to a disability, temporary or permanent, an injury that may be temporary or permanent, or an illness that may be temporary, permanent, and it could be physical or mental illness. And that person can be of any age. So, for example, a person is in an accident who has a broken leg, who cannot get around, will need a caregiver. But we're mainly thinking, and today I know our discussion is mainly going to be honing in on the older persons. But just to say, caregiver is someone who just takes care, as it says, of well, everybody needing care. So the short term or long term. And then in terms of whether it's formal, so they can be in a care mm-hmm. facility, and that can be state-owned right. or private. Mm-hmm. And we are also familiar with the informal caregivers. We can say, break them down into paid or unpaid as well. So mm-hmm. they can be family, caregiver, friends, you know, the kind next door neighbor who takes care of everybody.
Yes!
Yes. Or the community itself. Maybe you have community hubs, community groups, or special care groups that may come. So, and they may delegate and send persons out as necessary. So it's really all encompassing.
Yeah, because that answers one of my follow-up questions. Because I think people, when I think the public, when they think about a caregiver, they generally think about somebody who's a relative. I'm mm-hmm. glad that you pointed out that we could be talking about like formal or informal, or, you know, whether it's care in the home or outside the home, because even in a care facility, there are part of the caregiving team, you know, the nursing home or wherever it is that a person might be. So, all right, so let's speak about particularly the informal caregivers, or, you know, not the facilities,
right?
The individual people. Do you need special skills to be a caregiver? Because I usually get that we do get that cry, when particularly if somebody's been like admitted into a hospital or early up in the diagnosis and that sort of thing, with dementia or any sort of decline, when it comes to physical decline or anything with an elderly person, the first thing you hear is, oh, well, I ain't able with that. Well, I ain't a nurse. Mm-hmm. I don't know how to do this. I don't think mm-hmm. I can manage that, right? And granted, every situation is going to be different based on the patient, but like, do you need any particular skills to be a caregiver?
That's a loaded question, so let me just start with with, yes, I would say basic first aid training, and that goes for anything you're taking care of someone who has an illness. So mm-hmm. whatever that basic, if it's an injury, if it's a wound, if it's basic life support, that kind of thing, that can be done. But then generally, when it comes to zoning in on family caregivers for older persons, which is what we want to look at, the older person especially, that person, I believe, should have also be equipped with knowledge of what happens when a person gets older, what happens to the bones, the mind, what even is frailty. What do we mean by frailty? You say somebody's frail, that has a medical definition. Not just, oh, they're old and frail. What happens to the brain as they get older? Skin, hair, nails, like literally head to toe, and the emotional aspect. And not to mention if that older person has a non-communicable disease, such as diabetes, hypertension, what do you need to look out for? Are the medications that you have? What is the nutrition? What nutritional needs do they have? So it sounds as if they need a degree in themselves to be a caregiver, but
right,
you know, but the special skills, I would say, is just for someone to give a basic training and understanding is, okay, this is the brain and hair and muscle tone of a 5-year-old, a 30-year-old, and what happens to the body after you reach 40, 50, and how that comes into play when you are taking care of an older person, what care you need to have, what house retrofitting you may need to do, that sort of thing. What changes as you get older? How do you deal with it?
Thank you for that. We can stick a pin because I have a follower. Well, probably comment, not really a question from that. We have a call, right, Gregson? We have a call on the line.
Yes, hi, Greg.
Yeah, straight out the back. Hello. Yes,
hi, Greg.
Great. We're good, how are you?
Yes, hi, good evening, how are you?
I'm good, how are you doing?
Oh, wonderful, yes, that's glad to hear. Well, you know, I thank you that more than all of my blessings come from you. I bless you that I really need a touch from you, and you bless no man can curse. I love you for blessing me with your presence. Good evening to the good doctor as well, and thank Grace for taking my call in terms of the production. I have a couple of questions this evening based on this very personal, very at home. It really hits home to me, this topic, because I had taken care of my grandmother up until 104 and a couple of months from the age of the centenary. Wow. So I know what it is to I've been schooled, I've been a whole set of things. I've been really around the block with this thing, and I know that how we're talking and paying more attention to some of the misnomers and some of the effects of this, these challenges of today. My first question is, in terms of the bad treatment that caregivers get, especially to the elderly, I remember my grandmother, you know, God rest her, I didn't get all good treatment all the time. So I'm wondering, what is the solution to be able to provide for the better treatment of caregivers themselves based on sometimes, you know, the inability of the person receiving that care, that charge or that supervision, behaving themselves in an obedient or friendly or whatever manner that, depending on the relationship that you have with such, because I was her grandson, but sometimes, you know, it's just a nurse who is not your friend. The second question that I had as well, now, when we talk about caregiving, we talk about the different types of caregiving, the mental, the physical, the well-being and safety and care of those who constantly need it. I'm wondering, my question is, in terms of, obviously, you know, you wouldn't always want locals to receive it, people close to you or whatever, in my case. Now, in the case of the hospital setting where, you know, you can get, and it was on the news today that people have these accidents that come in and need it. What about the extra-regional, the tourism, the aspect of public where, you know, you might not know anything about them, you know, you might not have a particular situation where those people who come to you are in even a state to receive the care because they come from overseas, they don't know the country, they don't even know, sometimes their language is very difficult. And we just had the Ghanaian nurses that came to us. How does that impact us? How does that impact you? How does that impact those who give care when those who are outside of our realm of sometimes even understanding did that? And I remember when I had COVID as well, Dr. Kiofort, when I was at Harrison's Point and the Cuban nurses were coming and, you know, they were speaking Spanish and I knew a little bit of Spanish, so I could have gone into that. My next question before my last one is, when there is a great understanding, when there is a wonderful relationship that can be built after the care is given, what are there any solutions, are there any tips that you can give based on the vacation aspect from the ability not to burn out? So when that person has died, my grandmother died, and yes, I took a long vacation after that to avoid the burnout so that I'd be able to get it done and to feel a lot easier and to have closure. So what about that in those particular situations? My final question is, now you have a particular aspect or issue where diet comes into play and is very important in terms of keeping the person who's receiving the care, who's receiving the support, the person who is under the charge to keep happy, to keep well, to actually recover faster so that the cycle of care isn't as much or is less in terms of its duration and its what you would call intensity. In terms of the technique that you can give in terms of diet, are there any helpful advantages to giving, say, if you're a mental patient and you want them to have more omega-3 so that they can heal better? I just wondered if there are any things involved in that that can relate to the aspect of actually increasing the ability of the caretaker and the caregiver to have a quicker response in terms of finishing up and getting out of there and going on to something else. Thank you very much. You brought healing to my soul and showing up for your growth. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much for calling as usual. And we have taken note of those points. And some of them actually feed into some of the points that we wanted to raise. So we're going to incorporate them into the conversation as we go on, right? So back to the comment that I wanted to make about the special skills. It did, you know, it did sound like you need a degree to take care of this person. But what I wanted to stress to the listeners is that a lot of the things that Dr. Husbands was mentioning are actually skills that are easily learned by the caregiver, as long as you maintain communication with particularly their medical team. And then, you know, just as long as you are interested and you really want to, because if you're going to take up any role, any particular job, you need to be informed about what it is that you're going to do. So don't think that what the list that Dr. Husbands gave, if you actually really analyze it, a lot of these are not things that are difficult. It seems long, but it's not difficult for you to actually do, right? So we did mention like dementia, right? But Dr. Husbands, what else, what other conditions would cause an elderly person to need a caregiver? Because we do know there are some, you know, centenarians who are very much self-sufficient. So age is not the only the only thing. But there are other conditions that can arise besides dementia that would actually require somebody to need a caregiver. If you could just give us a couple of examples.
That's true. That's great. So an older person who, yes, they're in their garden and so on, but they may not be, they may or may not remember as they used to, or they may.
Right.
So, and then they're not as strong as they were before. They may not be wanting to or able to drive. So let's say a person who says, I can do for myself, they can go into town, but they may need someone to take them to the supermarket. Or they may need someone to cook one or two meals for them, or they may need someone to pay the bills for them, or they may, instead of going and standing in the long lines in the back, you know, especially going outdoors these days with all the diseases we have going on, you still have to be cautious. There's also, again, we break it down into short, medium, and long term. So if they have an injury, the older person too, or if they've just gone to hospital, they're going to need a higher level of care. So family may consider, according to their, whether they use the state, public, or they use private care, whether they can coordinate efforts to take care of whatever is the immediate concern. So if there's a wound, if it's an injury, they take care of that. If it's somebody who's not injured, as you mentioned, and quite fine, they may just need help with what we call activities of daily living. So that is, and maintaining their nutrition. So you may or may not have to call the nutritionist. Or we live in a Google age. You can just say, well, you know, or ask your doctor. It's always best to ask the doctor.
Yeah.
Who's the team center and who has to coordinate with, I mean, everyone. The nurses, the social worker, the caregiver, the dental person, the physiotherapist. So speak to your doctor. Know what the baseline of the person is. And then ask your questions from there. Well, what do I need to know in terms of their nutrition? Because they're older, so they're losing protein. So how do I incorporate protein? They're diabetic. How do I manage that? How often do I test their blood sugars? So an older person may not be willing or able to do all that. So you may have someone who can come along and assist them and say, okay, I'll make the calls for you. You can just talk to your friends. I'll go to the bank for you. And it's really a coordination and it's cooperation and it's meeting in the middle where, as I like to call it, a three-legged stool. So the older person is part of that stool. The healthcare provider is another part of that stool. The caregiver is another leg, of that stool. And everyone needs to coordinate and cooperate. So it can't be one person in one corner and so on. Also wanted to say to that the caregiver has a greater role than we may think, because they're actually the advocate for the person.
Yes.
So they may all the go to the medical visits. They know the medication. They may be there always with the person or not, or they're the prime caregiver. And we know not only in Barbados, but many places, people may have several children and there are only one or two who are the prime. And then the others are not saying they're not interested, but they're on the flanks. So we can bring them in. Again, cooperation, delegation. Delegation is key. So that when you're advocating for it and you're doing all the things, I mean, just, you know, we forget, but we got to take out the garbage. Who's going to do that? All those things that have to be done day to day, healthcare, maintenance, transportation.
Exactly.
All of those things are being incorporated in what the main caregiver or prime caregiver, family caregiver, we would say. And that person will need assistance as far as that, as far as them being on the other leg of the stool to boost them up while they assist the older person so that they can know, you could say, focus on just getting older and aging healthy and happy and like fine wine.
Right.
Yeah.
And you brought up that brings me to another point, because even in listening, you know, something as simple as who's going to take all the garbage, because we think of that as a simple task. I mean, it's a task I do not like doing now, far less when I get older. So I hope that my child does that for me. But like, it brings into mind the fact that this is supposed to be a team approach. You may have a family where there's just one child, fine, you know? But in the case where there are several children or nieces and nephews, because some nieces and nephews relationships with their aunts and uncles are closer than even their parents.
That's right.
You know, but these, because sometimes I think that other relatives believe that they can't have a role if they're not the one who, in worst case scenario, is willing to be changing the pamper and cooking and cleaning and, you know, because they have to work. So they may think, well, then, you know, I don't really have a role. It's not possible for me to do anything. But you may actually be the person who is best to go to the appointments with the person, your relative, because the one who does the everyday care may very well be an all-rounder, and that's what we would love. But they may just be the person, not just, but be the person who is good at the everyday nurturing and care of the patient, but may not necessarily be the most assertive person. You may have somebody else in the family who's a little more assertive, who will be able to dialogue with the medical professionals and stuff a lot more, and sometimes insist on things being done that may be overlooked. And you may have, as you say, another relative who's very handy and good around the house, dealing with the maintenance and all the other things, so that the other caregiver doesn't have to deal with that. No. They don't have to ask you a question. Like, you see that the sighting boards weren't changing, you come and you do that.
Yeah. Right? I mean, you know, to make sure, delicately.
Yeah, to make sure that is in a, you know, that everybody's in a safe environment. So we did touch on I think we covered most of what the responsibilities of a caregiver would be, because it's wide and varied. Oh, no. Okay. So Dr. was indicated, have a lot more. So what are some of the responsibilities of a caregiver that we haven't mentioned?
That's right. So we're dealing with family caregiving and parents or relatives. Remember, you're now the parent of your parent, and all of the emotions and all of the dynamics that go on with that within a family,
a good point.
Between families, between the member, between the whatever. Mm-hmm. So mom was mom or dad was dad, and they were in charge. No, they aren't so much. And now you have to go and do that role. So it does require, again, patience. I think if it's one word I've heard from every single caregiver, is how much patience they you too.
Yes.
There you go. How much patience they needed, how much patience they did not know they had. And their character was developed from there, I can tell you. Personally too, I can tell you. So I would say for caregivers, tips would be personal And then secondly, regarding the person you're taking care of. And thirdly, regarding the home. So we spoke a little bit of home maintenance as well. So I can just maybe swap that into house care and also fire safety. So make sure that all of the smoke detectors are there, all the fire extinguishers, the steps are safe, the lights are on, you know that all the lights are burning, the bed is safe, there are no rugs on the floor, all the things that have to do with maintaining the home. Regarding the person who you're taking care of, again, patients, but also learning from others. You know, in Barbados, we tend not to want anybody to know anything about what's going on or the fact that we might be tired. Yes, there's a place for, as we say, telling out your business. But if you have a trusted friend who's also gone through the same thing, then seek them out. Reach out. Reach out. Family members may not be, everybody might be just frazzled because of what's going on. So there's information online, but there's also information that you can get. Don't reinvent the wheel. There are others who have been taking care of it. That gentleman called, took care of his mom till 100. He must have information that a caregiver now starting might know. So this speaks to what we will talk about a bit later in terms of having groups where persons can freely speak. And it brings me and understanding, and also I would say observing closely, because trust me, Dr. St. Hill, it changes from hour to hour. Things you observe in the person. So I would say head to toe. I know it sounds a lot every day to say, let me look at them from head to toe. But because of their skin changes, and if they're confined to bed, or if they are getting more frail or whatever, just make sure that they're hydrated, that their skin is fine, that they have no bruises, it's so that they true. Have no new cuts, that they have no new things that they don't want to tell you, because they're also proud and not bad pride, just dignity pride, you know? So we just give them that understanding, but we also say, well, I have to look. And then again, the bit that's also with personal really, self-care, time out, delegation, and speak up. If I had one of those things to put in one word, it would be, what is your daily habit that you do for yourself? Your oxygen mask. What's your oxygen mask habit every day? Even if it's 5 minutes.
They forget that. Their entire day becomes about, their entire schedule becomes about their relative. And it's like, if they don't, you know, bathe and brush their teeth before this relative gets up, then nothing else for them gets done for the day. It's just when you ask them what happens today is, well, you know, mommy gets up at 6, I give mommy her tea, mommy gets her bath, I make her breakfast, I give her medication, I put her out to sit, I start cooking, I give mommy her lunch, and it goes on and on and on, and you never hear, I sit and read a book. You know? So, yes. So that kind of brings us to segue now to talk about something that the caller was asking about, which is burnout and the caregiver.
Right.
So let's talk about that.
Yes, the burnout is where, there's fatigue, then there's tired, then there's fatigue, then there's burnout, which is when you're all of your buffer limits, so your sleep, eating, everything is gone haywire, and you're not in a position to take care of your everyday tasks because you are simply too exhausted to deal with them, either mentally drain or physically drain, and you can't do not even the basic washing. And sometimes persons are thinking just what you said, like brushing your teeth or bathing. They can't even get out of bed, much less. It takes effort even to put the shoes on. And this is a reality that I have seen and personally and have observed in person and heard from persons, and you see it all over the world. So I would say we're not alone in it, so we can all learn from each other. But how do you know you are in burnout? So think of this as, scorching. You feel as though you cannot go anymore. Relationships start to get conflicting. You start to feel resentful. You're isolating yourself. You just have no interest in what life has to offer. You just want to stay in bed and stay in bed. And whatever has to be done, maybe you'll do it and you go back to bed. Excessive use of medications to self-soothe, such as drugs or alcohol, not necessarily the best way to deal with stress. But let's face it, that's what some have had to resort to in order, or felt they had to resort to in order to keep themselves calm. And especially if there's no one to talk to. Extreme irritability or anger or resentment toward the patient. So, you know, we are all our patients, I would say, have limits, and we all have limits. But if you are feeling, I am not the same way I was before last or last month, and I cannot do this anymore. You're persistently anxious. The guilt is overwhelming. Stress and tension. Your blood pressure has gone up. Your blood sugars aren't well controlled. Your muscles are wasting. You're absolutely exhausted. You can't do nothing. Everything in life is just gone, and you are just living in survival mode. That is the classic. Those are signs. So if you have any of those, please, I urge you to recognize it as you are heading to, or you are in burnout, and you may need to seek the services or of a healthcare provider. It may not necessarily be a psychiatrist, or be a psychologist, or your general doctor, who you can just go and, as we say, vent to, and help you to maybe see the forest and not the trees that you're seeing, and give you a little bit of perspective, and give you some clues, and give you some ways that you can actually manage. But yes, burnout is something that faces, I would say, almost every single caregiver.
It's true. It's true. Because what I was thinking about, because some for those who have never had like an elderly relative to take care of, they may be a little more familiar with, as yet, they may be a little more familiar with taking care of like a newborn baby. And that very much sounds like how new mothers are, where sometimes they do not get paid. They don't remember to eat. Yeah. They don't get to do anything except bathe the baby, feed the baby, change the baby, put the baby to sleep, wash for the baby, wash the bottle, all of that, and never even go to the bathroom.
Yes.
You know, for those who are not sure that they can relate, you know, maybe you can relate to one extreme or the other, but again, they do say once a man and twice a child.
It is
true. So it's kind of on the extreme, you may be going back to almost like taking care of a child.
Especially
so what are some of the ways? Yeah. Yes. That's literally a baby. And you know what though? I always try to tell relatives or loved ones as well. Remember, sometimes you have to remember the care and the effort that that person put into raising you and making you who you are, or they were to you in your time of need, because it was not easy raising you straight through primary school and secondary school, but you had their back chat and all sorts of things for them. And yet they sacrificed to make sure that you were able to get your education, that you were able to eat, that you know, I mean, every story may not be so positive, but for those that are, you know, sometimes you have to remind yourself that that is why you have to, it's your turn to pay back, you know?
It is.
So what can these loved ones do because you did speak about self-care.
Yes.
What can they do to prevent themselves? Because being tired is a natural part of being a caregiver. We will get tired because we're human. But what do we do to prevent it from progressing to burnout?
Excellent. And again, that's where the communication with others comes in. I think we can start there first, because no one is can't read your mind. They don't know how tired you are. And honestly, when people are not in the home with you or in the house with you where you're living with that person, they can't see the day to day. They don't understand. And personally, I wish someone would come into the house and just spend like 2 hours or 3 hours or 5 hours with the person and get a little taste of what that person has to do 24 hours a day, just so you can have some kind of empathy. But despite that, just gently, because nerves go frayed and frazzled, it's true, but gently, let's meet and communicate. If it is only one person, you may have to get a close family friend or the physician. But if you have a big family, and let's say, and everybody relatively gets along, you can just pick the one or two and we meet, and then we say, okay, we'll pass on the message to the others. So let them know, And but for you yourself as an as the caregiver, I've said before, and I'll say again, habits is what you do every single day when you get up or before bedtime. Whatever you do, it must be for you. And the seven most, I have it at seven things. So that's sleep and how you process your body for sleep, how you actually take care of your, I call safe space. So when you feel overwhelmed and you know the person is safe and they're sleeping, or you're overwhelmed and a family member is there, go into your room, lock it and say, or go into the bathroom. That's the only space I know some people have. Go in the bathroom and lock the door. And just for 5 minutes, I just want this time to just do what I have to, just relax. So have your safe space. Yes. Exercise. You can stretch and turn and twist, jog on the spot, do two other, you know, neck turns, and you're done. 5 minutes, but you did it for yourself. And your brain says, ooh, reward. Then make sure your diet and nutrition are up to scratch. So what are you eating? You just said that about moms and babies, and you're like, when did you last eat? I don't know. But that person you're taking care of had breakfast and lunch, is about to have dinner. You had nothing. That's not sustainable. And they didn't have water. That's not sustainable. So ensure that all you can pack your meals, I'd say like a week in advance from the night, a week in advance, and then prep the night before what you're going to eat the next day. You know, that's yours. You don't have to think about what you're eating next day as you do with the person you're taking care of. The other one, I don't know which number we're at now, but face care and foot care, essential. One, you got to take care of your own feet. You got to walk on your own feet. If you have a chronic disease yourself, you must take care of your feet. Face care, well, our face is what we present to the world. So your face, just take care of yourself. I'm not saying you got to put on oogles and makeup or anything, but just, you know, do your hair, do your face. Go to some hairdresser at times. Let someone come, delegate, and go. And the last thing I would say is for those who, how they pray, their prayer is reliance on power that is greater than yours. And believe me, that sustained me. It sustains a whole lot of others throughout centuries, and it will sustain you as well. Those who may be more into meditation and quiet time, do that as well. Have a 3 or 5 minute, they're on YouTube, 3 or 5 minute breathing techniques to know how to calm yourself, know how to, as I say, self-soothe. And make sure that that is what you do every single morning. It will only take 10 minutes. Promise you, but start with 5 so your brain doesn't go like, I got 5, 10 minutes in the day. No, start with 5, then gradually go up. It's all about oxygen mask first so that you are breathing while you're then taking care of the other person. Does that make sense?
It does. it makes a lot of sense. So our caller was asking about, he said when at some point he had to literally take a vacation after his grandmother. I can't remember if he said she passed or anyway, after taking care of her, he needed a vacation. And sometimes for a lot of caregivers, it does happen after the person has passed. But, you know, how important is it to have these breaks during the time that you are caring for a person?
It is essential. It is essential for your mental stability. Mm-hmm. And it's good to also let the person know that that's your boundary. So you've created and designed your own safe space by saying, yes, I take care of you, but here's the boundary beyond which I am not going to get sick. And I have quite a few patients right now who are on staycations because they let their relative go with their spouse or relative go with someone else, or they took to a daycare respite care, and they and you're able to then get your own quiet time, recuperate, and set your own personal goals, because when you have your own goals that you want to reach, that helps you to then make provision and make time for your personal goals. So as you said, I think we spoke earlier, it is not just about, okay, this is my life now, and this will never be the same again. And it is until whenever the Lord decides, you know, no. Mm-hmm. Personal goals, set time, delegate, put it aside. And it doesn't have to be a staycation. Go by a friend who knows your situation.
I agree.
And lay on the couch. I mean, just take a break.
Yeah, because like when like situations, families that I've seen work really, really well in some of these situations is where, you know, you have maybe one child or one particular family member who, yes, is the primary caregiver Monday to Friday or even Monday to Saturday. Mm-hmm. And they then have like another sister who comes down on weekends, who usually work during the week, but will come on weekends to, you know, give them a break so that they can go to the supermarket, so they can go to the hairdresser, so they can go to the beach, so they can sit outside, or they would actually take the relative with them, like take mommy down by them for the weekend and that sort of thing. And I think that's something that we need to bring in to the plan from early, you know, don't just wait until things are so overwhelming for that person. If it's something that you do from early, then it's something that we can, you know, it really helps everybody. We have another caller on the line. Hello, good evening. Oh,
hi, good
evening. Well, yeah.
How are you? Yes.
Hi, I'm good. How are you doing?
Yes, thank you. All is well. I'm blessed. I just wanted to ask a very quick question here. Thank the production team for taking my call. Now, you would have asked some of my questions before, and I really appreciate that. I thank you so much. Now, in relation to that, what about the caregiver receiving a reward or award, something to that effect of they're being worthy when that person dies, when that person goes to heaven, in terms of the kind of, they would have had closure and everything, but the reward that they get in return for what they did. I remember that I must give my mother real credit for her yeoman service. She took care of my grandmother for more than 10 years, cooking one meal a day, coming up to the house to supply me with supplies at the house and everything. And even during COVID, she would have been so instrumental. So she deserves an award for an award. But what about the most important aspect, though, in terms of the financial aspect in palliative care? I remember with my grandmother when she came down with her illness and there was no way for her to come back, that it drained finances on the family tremendously and impactfully. I'm just wondering about that. How do you circumvent? How do you get around that so that you're able to put the hole in that square round peg in a round hole? Thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I feel like you are reading my note, caller.
Yeah,
am I? Yeah. So I think well, Dr. Husbands, you were going to make a point before we took the break for the call.
Yes, so we had said maybe the 5 day a week and weekend shifts can be done. But in the day, so let's say you may have a paid care, someone who comes to assist the family caregiver, and some families do that. They're able to maybe have one nurse who comes in the day to assist that person. And they leave, let's say, 2, 3, 4 o'clock. And then another relative who maybe finished work at the time, well, another child or niece or whatever, son or daughter, come from work and spend maybe another hour or two. And they may not have to do all the rigorous cleaning and so on, but it's just time spent with the person. One, they see somebody else. Two, you get to be with them, and that there's, you know, when time is limited, every moment is precious, and we really see the value of our parents and grandparents as we get older, and they too. So even you don't necessarily have to do a whole 5 days, and the person's like, oh my word, nobody's coming till weekend. They can say, okay, hey, I can get a break at 2 o'clock. I can get a break at 4 o'clock. And then someone can come down and do a part of the Saturday or most, and a part of the Sunday. I mean, it is challenging, we know, but it does require communication, cooperation, and consideration, because that person otherwise is there all the time. So put yourself in their shoes.
Yep. That is very, very important. So what the caller was bringing up was the other point that we were going to speak about, is that there are some long-term planning that families have to put in place
when you recognize that you have a particularly elderly relative who is, you know, by, you know, if we're just being real, their time is shorter than what has passed, right? So what are some of the areas, because the caller did speak about the fact that, as you know, especially if the relative has like other illnesses, and just by virtue of getting older, their needs increase, and that increases the financial need, but their income does not increase, because we know once you have a pension, that's a fixed income that's not going anywhere, that's not going up, right? So what are some of the things that, some of the areas that relatives need to look at in terms of long-term, come together in terms of long-term planning for care?
All right, so start early is always great, but yes, when your horse is out of the stables, there are some insurance companies that will allow for, you can ask your insurance broker what the mm-hmm. company's plan may allow. It may right. allow for a person who's above 70, I mean, it may be a higher premium, but they may cover certain expenses.
Right.
Family members, again, or close relatives or close friends who may agree to, when you speak to them, may agree to covering certain parts of the finances. Yes. But the insurance company is one of the main things, I would say. And starting early with your insurance company and seeing what policy fits best. For just life policy, I'm not an insurance person, but I can just see what persons have been saying. So life policy, health plan, and I yes. can tell you personally, having a health plan, even though we're doctors, is, and
oh yes,
if you're a medical person and you don't get sick, think again.
I told the brand new set of interns that just last week or right. before, I said, yeah. you know, there are a lot of things that we do get for free or complimentary with our colleagues. But you still need health insurance. I can't stress health insurance enough to the public.
Can't stress that enough. Wish I had a megaphone for that. Can't stress that yep. enough. So have your health insurance, have your, speak to your broker, have a financial plan, bring on an attorney who can yes. then do power of attorney, so that there ain't no noise, as we say in Barbados, when yes. it's time to read will, when it's time to
correct.
Put things in final place, where they're going to be buried, who's going to do the service. I mean, we just have to do all the right things. We can't. We're not accelerating the process. We're just being mm-hmm. real that this process prepared. Has a journey, and be exactly. prepared. So I yep. would say that would be the long term in terms of what your insurance policy would be. If you have to now get one, what they may allow you. Mm-hmm. But if you are in a position, let's say you're in your 40s, 50s, 60s, and you may or may not have had one, or you may want to change. I know some companies. I'm going to say cut you off. It's not nice for
them. They may stop. They discontinue. Yes. Yeah.
Your insurance. Basically. Yeah.
After 60, 65. Yeah.
Yeah. So find that out early before retirement. What yeah. is their cutoff? And how can you exactly. then buffer yourself with your insurance so that when the pension comes and it's less, or in these days if it comes, And when it comes, it might be unpredictable. You don't know. Yeah. Then you actually have that kind of a buffer from mm-hmm. your own resources, which mm-hmm. can then pool with someone else's. So it's again brings itself down to who can provide. Look for who can provide what. Ask as many questions.
Yes.
Cooperate and communicate.
I agree. We have a caller on the line. Garrison.
Hello. Good night.
Mm-hmm. Hi. Good night. Welcome to the program.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Right. I'm fine. That guy who was on just now, he is so unreasonable. I like how he big up the
audience. Well, we weren't saying that.
I'm real disappointed with him. Anyhow, I say what I come to say.
Yeah, you make your point.
Yes. I had a family member
mm-hmm.
who lose a leg. I dealt with that member for a good few years. I had the leg done in her late 80s, 90, and she made 96. Mm. So you will know she had
nice. Oh, wow.
But one of the things that had happened, she fell and I had to put her in the district hospital. Our hospital to your itch, right? There's mid recommendations at times, not all the time, to see if they can get some person put in the district hospital. I realize that we are hearing that people are leaving people at the QH and not going back further. I am saying it has happened, and I'm saying in my position, it didn't happen. But they just have room at the district hospital very often, but the time to make the do the paperwork and make the connection with the district hospital and the hospital just take too much time. I think they should have some person in government working at QH go around to these individual district hospitals and see who have room from who don't. Because remember, at one point, there were about 6 beds vacant for a real long time. And I'm saying if the load is that difficult, all 6 of them should have filled up in 2 days. But the main point I want to make is that the care at the district hospital is semi-mediocre. And I would elaborate. I used to go for that relative closed every day, take them home and wash them and take them back smelling great. It was even complimented to their home and smell. But one day I realized the vests, some fancy vests my sister had sent from overseas, were vanishing. So I draw it to the nurse's attention. The woman tell me she don't wear a vest. I feel like I have somebody to kick me downstairs. I didn't say that she moved them or anything, but she was so angry at me complaining that that's what she said. And then quick, so that relative caught a cold, a bad cold, and it lasted real long. There were a young doctor there who said to me, blah, 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 I won't go into details, what to do and what not to do. And I felt real good. By the time I gone there and they had me set up, the nurse, the head nurse, the matron, and another guy wanted me to come in on the meeting called. I know he would come every day and collect the clothes. And I asked him, why wouldn't they set me up? Want me to sit in on a meeting without letting me know? When you know that I have a number there that you guys can easily get hold of me. I ain't gonna do like you guys hold up the show. What was the response from that is that I was complaining too often. If you are old and you enter a district hospital and you accustomed wearing a petticoat, when you get there, it is history. So that old person who attained accustomed to their body, keeping warm for all these years, it will be taken from you. It no longer happened, or not, we had more old people living to 100. Have a good day, and go on.
Thank you very much, sir. Many points were made. But to find it positive from what the caller spoke about is, I think he just reinforced one of the points that we made earlier about the caregiver being the advocate for the patient or being the advocate for the elderly person, where, you know, just because they're in an institution doesn't mean that your responsibility as a caregiver stops. You know, you still have to, your personal mission is still about your relative, even though you're not the person doing the day-to-day care. You know, it's the nurses and the doctors and so on, but you still have to be the advocate for your relative. So if I could pull one thing from that, it would be that. But he also did bring up a point that I would like the public to understand a little better, which is that our district hospitals only have so many beds. They only have space for so many patients.
Yeah.
And nursing homes are expensive. Nursing care on a whole is kind of pricey, right? So, unfortunately, the waiting list
for the district hospitals are very, 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 very long. And so sometimes the reason it takes so long is because they just literally do not have a space, and you have to wait for somebody to go into the departure lounge, quote unquote, in order for a new patient to be admitted. So those are things that we have to take into consideration. But this did bring up the point. I know we are soon running out of time, but Dr. Husbands, if you could touch on social services.
Yes. I think the caller did bring up who can go around to places. The hospital does have one main social worker at the moment. I know this is contentious, so I won't go into it too much. In the accidents and emergency department, and as well, they have social services. And these people work really, really hard, because there was a study that did show that over 400%, I did say 400%, of things that, of the care and the everything around the older person has to do with is social. It's not so much like the physical bit, it's the social. How do we take care of mom? How do we understand the disease? How do we understand how to take care of her? How do we get the nurse or the occupational or physiotherapist on board? Social services arrange for all of that. And kudos to them, because it really is an intense service. So I would definitely put a plug for us to have more social services, and also more persons, well, like myself or those geriatric trained nurses to bring in to have some training on board for nursing aides and for doctors as well, to kind of know what happens, what to do, who to go to, and how to get it started. So again, it comes down to communication and interaction. Can't say that enough.
So where can caregivers get more information? Where can they turn when they want to find out things? So we did speak about going to the social workers, because they are a vast source of knowledge and resources. But where else can they turn?
Okay, so the two main places, public-wise, that's Ministry of People's Empowerment and Affairs.
Yes.
And that number, if you can write that for the listeners, is 535-1600. They usually answer the phone, don't worry. And the Seroptimists, they're another well-known group. They do have daycare. They do have, you can let your relatives stay for a weekend or just for respite care for the caregivers. They have no one in the family to go. And that's 438-1051. They can do that. But then there are many, and if they want, the public wants to contact me, I can give you my contact. And when it as relates to private daycare, which offer day respite therapy, weekend respite, and private curated courses, small courses that some nurses and I myself have also set up for caregivers. But I would say to all caregivers, form your own group, get your friends, your family, do your things, come, let's sit down, have a Friday night Zoom talk, like how we're doing now, and just, as we say, suss it out. Let's talk about what are your challenges, what's making me crazy, what happened today. You know, I have your own vent day and line day, and that's also a way to be safely socially distanced, have your friends and speak your troubles and know what else you need to do. I can't think of anything
I agree. I agree that you know, because everybody always asks, are there support groups? And you know, there may not be many formal ones, but that is for you to form your own, your informal ones, small ones for your friends and your relatives and, you know, other people in the community who, so this is a plug for the community groups to start groups like this, informal groups. You don't have to have any big expertise or anything. You can bring in the professionals you need to speak to everybody, but sometimes just sharing stories makes a difference. Like, I will always relate this to like parenthood, because I remember a few of my friends who were all pregnant around the same time. Our children are around the same age. And even just now, when you go to birthday parties, you start to realize, oh, your child don't eat anything but pizza and bread too? Okay, so I don't feel like such a failure. Right. So you realize, okay, everybody's grandparent wakes up at 3 o'clock in the morning and then goes back to sleep. Okay. So you start to sigh and relief Right? Yes. So just to wrap up, any closing remarks for us, Dr. Husbands?
Well, thank you very much, Dr. St. Hilda and the team for inviting me on this wonderful subject. Caregivers are the backbone of our society, the backbone of taking care, especially in our older population. But caregivers need to also have developed their habits, put their oxygen mask on first, communicate, learn how to delegate, and speak with the health professionals when you don't know what to do. Ask someone who knows what to do. Do not reinvent the wheel. There are ways that you can take care of yourself. There are ways that you can speak for yourself in addition to advocating for your loved one.
Agreed. Thank you so much, Dr. Lana Husbands, for joining us this evening. It was a wonderful program, and I know that you have so much more to tell us. So this is something that we're going to have to continue at a later date. Thank you, as always, Gregson, for facilitating. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
You are very welcome. Very, very welcome. And thanks for coming as well and bringing your very knowledgeable guest. Well, if there's anything else you'd like to add?
No, I can just tell you from now, next week. Next week, it's me again.
Okay. Guess we don't have to ask that question. Right, don't have to ask that question today. Yeah. All right. That's Dr. Keo Ford there, Keo Ford St. Hill. She was your host this evening. And on deck, she had with her Dr. Lana Husbands. And she just informed you that next week she'll be around again for another edition of the Better Health Radio Show right here on the Voice of Barbados 92.9 FM. So thanks to both of the ladies. Have a wonderful evening. Until next weekend.